This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Massachusetts transportation systems were in trouble this week.
Last night, it was at Logan Airport.
We're going to have to wait here for a moment. I think we hit the RJ off of our left with our wing.
And before that, it was on the MBTA's Red Line.
We all got out, walked through the cars, and we walked down the track back out to Porter.
And the transit woes weren't just for the commuters. This week, State Transportation Secretary Jeffrey Mullins said he will step down later this year.
Also this week, Mayor Thomas Menino criticizes the Secure Communities Initiative.
That for a simple crime, they'd be deported to their homeland, and that wasn't right.
And the Supreme Judicial Court says it will have to close 11 local courts due to budget cuts.
It was a very busy week, and so joining us now to dig through all the details is Julie Mohegan, Deputy Editorial Page Editor for the Boston Herald. Welcome back to Radio Boston, Julie.
Thank you.
Also with us today is Joan Vinocchi. She is a columnist for the Boston Globe. Joan, welcome to you.
Nice to be here.
It's wonderful to have you both. So let's just start right up front with the transportation woes kind of across the state this week. It kind of came to a head yesterday when Transportation Secretary Jeffrey Mullins, well, he didn't say, the Boston Globe reported that he was going to step down or is going to step down this fall due to a salary issue that he had with Governor Patrick. So let's just back up a little bit from that, because it's been quite a year already in transportation. Back in March, we had the 110-pound light fall on the Big Dig, and there was a lot of confusion as to who knew what when. And then a little later, this month, we have Helmut Ernst, I should say, the chief engineer of the Big Dig, telling the Globe as well that he'd been told not to leave a paper trail regarding safety issues in the tunnels. He's now on administrative leave. So that's a little background for people who aren't entirely sure what's going on underneath our feet and above our heads in Massachusetts. So, Julie, let me just first start off with you. What's your take on transportation today?
Well, it's been a very, very bad year for the Mass Department of Transportation, which is supposed to be sort of the new, more efficient, more consolidated system of administering all of the transportation efforts in the state. And I think it's done that in many ways, but obviously there are still some major problems plaguing that department. I mean, first there's the question of whether it's been successful in achieving any of the efficiencies that were promised. Secondly, I think you still have a cultural problem over there. Obviously the Globe story and this idea that we don't write anything down because we don't want it to trigger a quote-unquote formal event is just plain scary mm-hmm. for people who are driving on the roads these days.
Joan?
Well, I'd say, Jeff, we hardly knew ye. I mean, they seem to go through transportation chiefs very quickly under the Deval Patrick administration. And I'll take him at his word that he's leaving because he wants a higher salary. But I'm going to be the tough guy here and say that I think there was plenty of reason to think that it was time for change at the top. I mean, he's smart, he's thoughtful, he was cut a lot of slack and got a lot of leeway for his management skills. But if you're not going to be transparent about some really serious issues with the public, I don't see how you can lead a public agency.
There's no state agency in Massachusetts that can afford less to be keep the public in the dark. I mean, after all of those years, the Big Dig, the secrecy and the lack of transparency, it's just inexcusable. And I agree with Joan. I mean, Mullen is widely respected for his management abilities, and he's a very professional person brought a lot of talents to the job. But, you know, this has been sort of botched from start to finish.
I have to say that this is exactly the point that kind of left me scratching my head this week, because, I mean, I've interviewed Jeff Mullen before, very bright guy, knows transportation kind of inside and out at the state because he was at the Turnpike Authority before he became the transportation secretary here. He, of all people, should know that his department is going to get the most scrutiny of just about any in the state because of, you know, all the problems that it's had before. And back in March when that light fell, one of the first things to happen was that there seemed to be confusion right at the top about, like, was he told that it happened? Who told Governor Patrick? So, I mean, Joan, as you were saying, you know, who's going to, A, run this department with a stronger hand, and B, it's surprising that it wasn't Mullen.
Right. I mean, it seems like the key thing that had to change and must change is the culture of not being honest, of not being forthcoming. And they've just had problems. When they get somebody from the outside, the outsider isn't accepted by the insiders. When they get somebody from the insider can't change the culture. So you add that to the fact that, you know, people think $150,000 a year isn't enough. I don't know who you get for the next head of transportation in Massachusetts.
I will say, I think that the reporting on the issue of salary, I think the original source was a couple of sources close to the governor. I actually, frankly, thought that was a little bit shabby in a way. I think, if you're going to let the guy go, if you want him to go, if he's got to be the guy to go, just end it.
You are drawing a line between all the transportation problems. You don't buy the salary issue.
No, well, I'm not saying I don't buy it. I mean, they may have had a conversation in which, the conversation may have been triggered by the secrecy or the lack of disclosure of the earlier events. It may have been, Jeff, are you in this for the long haul? And Jeff saying, well, I don't know. Maybe I want to leave and get some more money. Anyway, I don't know that the two are mutual. I don't think that the two are mutually
exclusive.
You're
absolutely right. I mean, I think that if Deval Patrick had doubts about his management, Jeff Mullen's management, and he wanted him to leave, then he should have just said, I'm asking for his resignation. And, the salary thing, may be a bit of a smokescreen.
I agree with that. And I think, first it comes out that he wants more money, which I think leaves him exposed to a lot of criticism from the public who say, why can't you get by on 150 grand? And then the governor puts out this statement in which he praises Mullen, as if he were the second coming.
Okay, well, let me ask both of you something about this, because we've had Pam Wilmot from Common Cause, who, a good government champion. She's been in here saying, this salary issue is actually quite an important one, because the saying is that for an equivalent job in the private sector, running an institution with many thousands of employees, millions if not billions of dollars under assets, quote unquote, that you're managing, that people would get paid a lot more. So, Joan, as you were saying, who is going to come out of that sector giving up a huge salary to? I mean, you should say, their civic duty would be enough to drive them, but.
Apparently. I don't know who the next candidate would be, but I think people have to be realistic. At a time when even in Massachusetts we're doing better than elsewhere. At a time when people are cutting back and there's the state budgets had to have cuts. I don't know how much appetite there is to really raise a salary of a person in that position. And whoever takes a job has to love public service and really care about transportation and want to get the state back on track. And I don't know if that's too idealistic to think that there's a person out there willing to do it, but I hope so.
And look, we're not talking about we're talking about some basic problems here, some basic breakdowns in management and administration. We're not necessarily talking about, you don't need somebody who is the CEO of a major company to come in and run transportation. You shouldn't need that. Mm-hmm. It is a complex organization, but you just need somebody who's competent. And I know that Jeff, I wouldn't argue that he's incompetent, but clearly, there were some breakdowns here that you just had to start fresh.
Well, there's a lot to talk about regarding transportation, but we've got several other very big ticket items on our list today. So let's move on a little bit to the Secure Communities Initiative. So what happens this week is that Boston Mayor Thomas Menino says that the city of Boston is going to pull out of the Secure Communities program, even though the city was one of the pilot cities where this initiative, where local law enforcement gives fingerprints from folks they've arrested to the Department of Homeland Security, immigration specifically, to see if they have a serious criminal on their hands. So the problem that Mayor Menino says is that too many sort of smaller criminals, people who had been under watch for smaller offenses, were being picked up through this program. So let's listen to a little bit more of the mayor.
America was built on immigration, and I don't want my city to be a city where if you're an immigrant, you're afraid to be deported to another country for simple acts. This is supposed to be on issues like homicides, major crimes, and they were taking this too far.
Now, Julie Mahegan, I read the Herald's editorial on this. It was the headline, I believe, was something along the lines of "The Mayor Caves."
Yeah. Yeah, that was the headline.
Why do you say he's caving?
Well, look, I mean, I think it's astonishing to me that somebody can be that, make a statement that emphatic about the flaws with the Secure Communities program today or yesterday or whenever he made it, and be equally emphatic in the other direction, whatever it was, a month or two ago, about how this is not, this program is working. It's working in Boston. It's fine. we've been, since the very beginning, supportive of the idea that people who are arrested, not people who are just stopped by police, but are actually, you know, cuffed, fingerprinted, mugshot, arrested, that their fingerprints should be submitted to a federal database which tells law enforcement whether they're legal or illegal or legal residents of the United States or legal visitors to the United States either. And, you know, the mayor, the waffling on this is just kind of, it boggles the mind. I mean, this, and the mayor's not the only one. The governor, it originally signed on, said, okay, I'm reluctant to sign on to this program, but it looks like we have to. Because,
well, the same thing has also happened in the whole state of New York and Illinois as well. Joan, jump in here with your thoughts on.
Well, the Globe editorial said there were legitimate concerns about this
Globe and Herald not seeing eye to eye
on that particular program. So I'll try to make that case. I do think that the whiplash of positions is interesting, and I would love to know the real backstory and, you know, do some reporting on what really happened here. But listen, I mean, they're saying that, you know, that it discourages crime reporting and that it's bad for public safety. And it could be, you know, that we have had a series of, like we've had some violence in the city. We've had, you know, that the police are trying to establish trust with the community and get the community to, you know, come forward with information that it needs that to solve crimes. And if this is an impediment, if this is some sort of obstacle, if this makes people not want to come forward in some way and tell the police what they know about other crimes that are going on in their community, then I'd say, yeah, there are legitimate concerns. And the mayor is right.
Yeah, so here's one of the many sticking points about this issue that I'll be honest, we've done many conversations here about it. It's still not entirely clear in my head because what the federal government keeps coming back and saying is, okay, well, we understand your concerns. We're making some adjustments to the program. Immigration and the ICE program is saying that. But then they also come back and say, hey, come 2013, this is going to be in place nationally anyway. I mean, Julie?
I don't actually have any problem with the idea of looking at it and saying, okay, maybe there are tweaks that need to be made. There may be, quote unquote, legitimate concerns, to borrow a phrase from the Globe editorial. And maybe they need to look at the fact that in some of these very sympathetic cases that have been publicized, that there aren't, you know, there maybe wasn't sort of overzealous prosecution of all of this.
Well, to be clear, I mean, some of the sympathetic cases are as extreme as a woman, you know, calling in saying, I'm a victim of domestic violence, and due to that, she comes under police attention, and she's the one who gets caught up in the immigration, with immigration authorities.
Well, I guess I was thinking more along the lines, I think the Globe reported on this young woman, this 18-year-old woman who was driving, you know, didn't have a license,
right,
took her mother's car, drove, was stopped for speeding and that kind of thing. I mean, you know, the case that you're talking about, obviously that's a absolute worst case scenario. And nobody wants a program like this to discourage the public from coming forward. I haven't seen any evidence, frankly, yet that it has. And I think that also makes the assumption that people who are victims of crime have any more tolerance for the idea of, criminals who are living here illegally living among them.
Well, and I'll just throw out, you know, like a totally, I guess, cynical observation that perhaps it has something to do with presidential politics. And, you know, perhaps it has to do with the Obama administration, taking two sides of the same issue, you know, being on the side of, immigration control, so to speak, but also wanting to send the message to back off a little bit, because that is a constituency, not the illegal immigrants, but the legal immigrant community is a constituency that it needs going forward.
And it also seemed that there was a strange mismatch between Governor Patrick coming out clearly and saying, I don't like this as the governor of Massachusetts, and then the mayor of our largest city in the state being part of a pilot program. So now at least there's, whether you like it or not, they're more in line politically.
Right. And I feel sorry for Ed Davis, the police commissioner.
He had to go down to Washington.
He had to go down, and he's the one that, you know, really looks whiplashed.
Especially because this program has been in effect in Boston since 2006 on a pilot basis, and there's never been any sort of waving of concern, particularly by Davis, as far as I know, who's obviously got a legitimate point about not wanting to chill a relationship between the immigrant community and police, but at the same time being, you know, dispatched to Washington to complain to the White House.
He doesn't want to chill the relationship between himself and Menino
exactly.
either.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's
blame him.
Well, let's see if we can touch one more issue of law and justice before we run out of time, and that is the true, I guess, ringing of an alarm from the Supreme Judicial Court this week when it says it will have to close 11 courthouses around the Commonwealth and lay off employees due to cuts in the budget that Governor Patrick signed this week. You know, this is not something that we haven't heard from the SJC before, perhaps not as forcefully as this time around. I mean, Joan, the SJC's argument is that there's, you know, a true potential damage to the adjudication of justice in Massachusetts with these courthouse closings.
I know, and the governor's response is that the SJC position is confusing at best. And I just find it, you know, at least from a political perspective, just really fascinating that the, you know, the Chief Justice appointed by Deval Patrick is the person, you know, now leading the charge.
Roderick Ireland,
Ireland, you know, against the governor right now. And, I, you know, it's a little bit refreshing to see an appointee not bowing and scraping before the person that appointed him. As to the merits, well, I'm not sure about the merits. I mean, the timing seems odd after the budget comes out,
although
they have sounded the alarm previously, but to wait to get to this point where there is a budget in place and say, wait a minute, now we have to close courts and, you know, our justice is under siege, you know, they need some better public relations, I'd say.
Maybe they're hoping for a supplemental budget to come off Beacon Hill. Julie?
Yeah, well, I think there was actually a little bit of a sort of Casablanca vibe to the administration's reaction, which is we are shocked that the court, you know, that the judiciary is upset with its appropriation. You know, we really had no idea, or at least they're still talking about asking us to fill judicial vacancies and things like that. This is not new information. The chief administrative judge testified before the Ways and Means Committee hearing in February about the impact of potential budget cuts on his department. He said, and I have the quote where he said, I must stress the need for adequate funding to maintain existing levels. The trial court's ability to deliver timely justice is, without exaggeration, at the breaking point. Hmm. Now, this doesn't come as a surprise to anybody. I understand the question about the timing, why after the governor signed the budget. I'm not an expert on this. I think there were some assurances made by the legislature to the judiciary about certain funds that might come through that may not have in the end. So the other thing is, you know, they talked about asking the governor to delay filling judicial vacancies and clerk vacancies, and that was another response that they're horrified at the notion that they wanted to, you know, the administration is horrified at the notion that the judiciary wants to curb their constitutional authority. But the fact is, 26 other states have done that. According to statistics we looked at, 26 other states in the last couple of years have taken that step. It's a less than ideal step. But, you know, they're dealing with some fiscal realities here.
Well, I had not known that. So this is an ongoing story with the SJC, which I'm sure will come back up many times, especially now since it seems to actually be happening. But in the last few minutes we've got here, why don't we turn to what we usually end our week in review with, which is our hubbubs, those stories that maybe didn't get above the fold or at the top line of a radio newscast. And Anthony, why don't you start?
Okay. All right. Well, this story way below the fold. So in his hubbub last week, Craig Sandler of the State House News Service cried shark, if you remember, Magna, right? A reference to the first sighting of a great white. Well, today in Milford, Connecticut, apparently people are raising the alarm of cow. And so I'm going to read just a bit from the Hartford Current. This is reported in part by the Associated Press. Officials are on the lookout for a cow that has been on the run for more than a week and may be dangerous. And this is the part that interests me. I didn't know this about cows. Animal control officer Rick George says the 400-pound animal fled from a farm on July 6th and that he's a runner and a jumper and could be dangerous if approached. He notes that cows, and this I really didn't know, can jump up to 7 feet in the air. So we've got a jumping, running, potentially dangerous cow marauding in Connecticut. I'm very concerned about
Beware
this.
Beware if he crosses the Massachusetts line.
7 feet in the air, wow.
Joan, you're hubbub.
Well, mine's not as obscure, but I am fascinated by the sort of inter-family squabbling that's going on with the Kennedys.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, first over, you know, the RFK papers, will, you know, they go to the JFK library, or will they be taken elsewhere? And then sort of the infighting that's going on over the Hyannis compound, the Hyannisport compound. And, you know, you've got Joe Kennedy, the son of Robert Kennedy, kind of going rogue in the New York Times. And I think you may have Vicky Reggie Kennedy finding out that being married and having the Kennedy name is the same, not the same as being born a Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of the breakdown and again, showing just how important Ted Kennedy was to the family in terms of holding them all together. But it sounds like it could be a reality show. The Kardashians or something. I don't know.
The Kennedys and the Kardashians. Julie, your hubbub.
Well, I don't think anyone could argue that the Whitey Bulger story was not above the fold or isn't getting a sufficient coverage here. But we broke off a little piece of it in the Herald this week, where our reporter Laurel Sweet actually got a hold of Catherine Gregg's hairdresser out in Santa Monica. And I just sort of loved this idea that Catherine, you know, she was sitting in the hairdresser's chair just like any of the rest of us, chit-chatting away with her, shooting the breeze. And what I was astonished by is both that she acknowledged she was from Boston and that she liked Bad Boys, had a thing for Bad Boys.
But said he wasn't doing that anymore as well.
Yeah, exactly. Which I, the whole thing was just sort of bizarre. And I just like the idea that you know, Laurel used the great line that they say only her hairdresser knows. I think that's usually referring to hair color, but in this case, it takes on a whole new meaning.
I guess it is true that if you really want to know about someone, go to their hairdresser. Their dentist.
Bartenders, hairdressers, yeah.
The real therapists of the world.
Manicurists.
Well, Julie Mahegan, deputy editorial page editor for the Boston Herald, thank you so much for coming
in
today.
Thanks, Magna.
And Joan Vanocki, columnist for the Boston Globe, great to have you on Radio Boston. Thank you.
Thanks.